Chapter 7, text number 1. Maya saktam anakparta yogam yunjan madashrayah asamsayam samagramam yatagyasasi tachtrano bhagavan vacha. The Supreme Lord said, Mayi, to me, asaktamana, mind attached, partha, O son of Pritha, yogam, self-realization, yunjan, practicing, mat ashrayaha, in consciousness of me, Krishna consciousness. Asamshayam, without doubt. Samagram, completely. Mam, me. Yata, how. Yasyasi, you can know. Tat, that. Shino, try to hear. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how? By practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Purport. In this seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. And that's the summary. Next paragraph. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyotir, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything revealed to the person in, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is the ultimate knowledge beyond all, beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyotir and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna conscious yoga, consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. Paragraph. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of chapter 6. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tat, Shrinu, or hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna-conscious person. One has, therefore, to learn from Krishna. It's almost like a mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, a few other words, Krishna, Krishna, a few other words. Hope you're noticing. One therefore has to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. Last paragraph. In Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. You can sing along with me if you know the words. Srinvatasvakata Krishna Punyashavana Kirtana Ridyantakstoya Bhadrani Vidhunoti Saritsatam Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtuki Tadara Jastamo Bhava Kamalo Bhadayashchaye Cheta Etair Anavidham Stittam Satve Prasidati Evram Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavat Tattva Vigyanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate Vidyante Riddhaya Grantis Chidyante Sarva Sangshaya Shiyante Chasya Karmani Drishta Evat Manishwade. Translation. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures, or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita, is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. He hears more about, as he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of asamshayam samagram, understanding the supreme absolute truth, personality of Godhead. Ta-da! 1:2:17-21. Last paragraph is one sentence long, and it has three Krishnas in it. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. End of purport. We got purified so many times. You've probably heard the story of Bhaktisiddhanta. No, Prabhupada, actually. Somebody wrote an article for Back to God, and Prabhupada was asked to approve it. He said, oh, they said Krishna's name 21 times. Publish it. Yeah. That was the criterion. And then some articles that were bad press. Oh, they said Krishna's name so many times. Very good. He's following his own standards here. This verse, chapter 7, text 1, I've been told I didn't count, but the devotees that were doing the Bhaktivedanta Archives work of transcribing all the Prabhupada's lectures into English, into the typed out form. Of all the Bhagavad Gita verses, this one was spoken more often by Prabhupada than any other verse. Hint, it's an important verse. And it follows the last verse of chapter 6, too, very interestingly. Because the last verse of chapter 6, it's a dividing position between the first six chapters, karma yoga, or nishkam karma. We discussed this yesterday evening. And bhakti. And then, where's Luke? Luke asked the question, why is it important? Do we know the other processes of bhakti? The other processes in addition to bhakti? Because nishkam karma is a subset of bhakti. But as we discussed yesterday, according to our acharyas, it's the bhakti process that finishes it completely. Because otherwise, one can restrain oneself by sense and mind control, but the urge, the conditioning influences specifically, our dear friend false ego, acts even when restrained and controls by mechanical and other processes, by knowledge, it's still there. The urge is still there. And when the urge is there, it sometimes comes out. The modes of nature compete for supremacy and so on. So, bhakti process dissolves the tendency. It dissolves false ego. And it dissolves the material mind. And it dissolves the entire subtle body, material subtle body, leaving the pure thinking, feeling, willing, discerning capacity and sense of identity. It remains by the bhakti process. Therefore, madgatein antaratmana, from the text 47, which corresponds to this one, where one's mind is completely absorbed in Krishna. Asakta mana. We know from the nine processes of bhakti, one of them is asakti, attachment. So, where one becomes attached to Krishna, when the mind's mind becomes attached to Krishna, not just attracted to Krishna, or this is describing the advanced stages of bhakti. In other words, attached to Krishna. Beyond the anartha nivritti stage, beyond the nishtha stage, beyond the ruchi stage, up to the attached stage. That's the purified mind. The material mind has become dissolved. So Krishna is promising, and he fulfills his promise, always, that he is going to explain how that can be attained. And the means of attaining it is, in the last phrase, tat shrinu. Tat shrinu, hear from me. So there's emphasis upon that. Both the phrase tat shrinu directly within the purport, and then that nice long description of these verses from the first canto that starts with Srinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana, the process of hearing and chanting, beginning with that, leading to all the rest, up to the stage that, you know, to this asakti stage. One can achieve that just by hearing. Asamshayam samagram. Found in this verse. Asamshayam samagram. He, Prabhupada, inserts that in the very last of the verses of this series from the Bhagavatam, Vidyante Hridaya Grantis Chidyante Sarva Sanshaya. That's where the not material affection or affinity for matter cut. So the tendency for fruitive work, even in the realm of spiritual activity where we think that we're the doer, you know that one. Kartaham iti manyate. We think, okay, I'm going to become a pure devotee. Whoops. I'm going to become something. And you know, acting through false ego, we're discussing this in our talks upstairs. Striving for something, even if it's a desirable something, without the appreciation of the descending mercy. We talked about this yesterday also, the second feature of mercy, kripa. Effort, prayasa, and kripa, mercy. So when mercy, Krishna's mercy descends upon one who is striving to please him, that's bhakti, then it's complete. The knot of material affection is cut. Until then, we're managing it. We're perhaps utilizing or dovetailing in service to Krishna, hoping that it doesn't utilize us in Maya service as we dovetail ourselves in propensity-wise in Krishna's service. Vigilant that we don't become drawn into the material energy and utilized by the material energy instead of spiritualizing the material energy by using it in Krishna's service. So it sounds like we're juggling, but it's the difference between the spiritual position and the material position, being pure or being contaminated. And that fine edge, Prabhupada called it a razor's edge, very sharp. You have to be attentive, just like with a razor, otherwise very easy to cut yourself because the razor blade is so sharp. So the process of bhakti is very powerful and very sharp, and it can cut the affinity, but it requires being very vigilant, not just like, uh-oh, I better watch out, kind of fearful vigilance, but vigilance in continuing to direct our process of hearing to Krishna's message and receiving Krishna's message, taking it within. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadavaha. Now, this verse, text 1 of chapter 7, has a very similar beginning as the text 1 of chapter 9. In fact, the message of the two chapters, if you go through, those who like studying will notice the segments or sections of chapter 7 mirror chapter 9 and the first verse also. So in the first verse of chapter 9, Krishna uses the word pravakshami. Pravakshami means now hear from me. I shall now explain. Pravakshami. I am speaking. Now hear from me. Notice the similarity. It says, please be in the receiving mode because I'm going to explain this ninth chapter, the most confidential knowledge. It's sound vibration. It's broadcasting and receiving. The same as we understand the Bhagavatam is based upon. The Bhagavat Dharma begins with hearing and chanting. Srinvatasva Kata Krishna. Srinvatasva Kata Krishna. Hearing and chanting. Krishna Kata. Punya Shravana Kirtana. Hridyanta Sangyabhadrani. Vidhono Ti Saritsatam. The heart becomes cleansed. And in that cleansing, the misgivings are removed, the reality is restored, and the natural affinity for Krishna comes, this asam shayam samagram from this verse. And in this purport, Prabhupada is making the distinction between the realization that's being described here, the end of chapter 6 and the beginning of chapter 7, and again the beginning of chapter 9, is about Krishna. Krishna in his personal feature, and emphasis in the purport is included within understanding Krishna in his personal feature is understanding the Brahman and Paramatma feature. And the converse is not true, which is by understanding the Brahman feature, it doesn't include understanding Krishna. In fact, commonly those that have some appreciation or affinity for the Brahman feature relegate Krishna to fiction or a covered form of Brahma or some mumbo-jumbo, a wrong conception. So it's incomplete. That's putting it nicely. Their realization is incomplete. But this is asamshayam. The commentaries say asamshayam indicates the question that Krishna, that Arjuna asked Krishna in the beginning verse of chapter 12. What's that verse? There's a doubt. What's the doubt? Arjuna wants to know which is better, the impersonal or the personal. I mean, he's asking for our benefit. So Krishna says, without a doubt, the personal is better. And he gives his reasons why. Here we're getting, it's more complete. And the other is not complete. Another reason he gives in chapter 12 is it's very difficult. And then another reason is, with bhakti process, you have Krishna's help. And without bhakti, you're not looking for Krishna's help, so he doesn't interfere. And it's without Krishna's help. So it's really easy. My effort, or my effort and Krishna's help. Real easy math. So it's better, because we get Krishna's help, it includes everything, therefore it's better. And the other is very unnatural, and therefore it's difficult because it's unnatural. Now the impersonalists think, well, because it's more difficult means it's better. The thing that's easy isn't as good, because, you know, it's easy. Well, it's easy, but they can't do it because their heart is misdirected. That's the change of heart factor. I can still go forward with, you know, I'm going to do it mentality, and I'm going to merge with Brahman and whatever else. I want to fix my mind on super soul and control the breathing and do these austerities that are difficult. The austerities that are observed by the Mayavadis are very, very severe. Very, very severe. They can, if they can do them, that's a big if. It's still, the realization is incomplete, but they can't make the change of heart because they're still envious of Krishna. So, it's better. It's more complete. It's natural. You have Krishna's assistance. And in the end, you have a relationship with Krishna, as opposed to not having a relationship with Krishna, which is our condition now. And we know what that's like. It's not something we want to continue, except we're holding on to some of our baggage. So the process of hearing carries one beyond the position of doubt. No doubt obstruction. He's recommending or encouraging, inspiring Arjuna to hear in such a way it will carry him beyond doubt. Samshaya means doubt. And when one does like that, these verses indicate the natural illumination of the soul awakens. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, towards the very end, he quotes a verse from the 8th canto, which I'd like to read to you. Chapter 24, text 38. This is Matsya speaking to King Satyavrata. And he says, "You will be thoroughly advised." Well, read the previous verse. "Pulling the boat, you and all the rishis in it, O king, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Brahma's slumber is over." So much is going to get it, put everything on the boat, and I'll pull you to safety. Then he says, "You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as Para Brahma, will be manifest within your heart. Thus, you will know everything about me." That's this Asamshaya Samagram. Samagram means completely. Beyond doubt, you'll know completely about me. Now, how does that become possible? Well, it becomes possible if Krishna enlightens one from within. And when there's light, there's no more darkness. The modes of nature, the lower modes of nature, are not acting in that position. And in that position, Krishna illumines the heart. You know, so it's not just knowledge. Yay, I did it. I got knowledge. It's a transcendental relationship with Krishna where nothing remains unknown. At least nothing that the living entity needs to know. Whatever, say it the other way. Whatever the living entity needs to know, Krishna discloses. Once a devotee asked, you've heard this one before, but probably, "Swamiji, I've heard that a guru is supposed to know everything. So, how many windows are there in the Empire State Building?" And Prabhupada's reply was, "How many drops of water are there in a mirage?" And then he explained that the knowing everything is what the devotee needs to know to go to Krishna, which Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. What you need to know to go to Krishna, Krishna will disclose that to you. And similarly, somebody asked a devotee, asked Prabhupada, "Does the spiritual master know everything about his disciple?" And Prabhupada said, "He's not super soul. Super soul knows everything about everybody. But the spiritual master knows according to the indication that Krishna gives, and Krishna may give indications through others. Not necessarily, he's got a television and he's, you know, monitoring, whatever you call those, hidden cameras, and he's got a hidden camera watching, got a lot of channels and scanning all the channels to see what everybody's up to. It's not like that. But what is needed to be known, Krishna discloses to one who is tuned into the Krishna channel. One who is asaktamana, or mudgatain antaratmana. And that's fixing the mind upon Krishna. And exactly as Prabhupada, I'll read it. How does one do that? How do you fix your mind upon Krishna? By the hearing process. And it's another verse that's quoted in our Vaishnava's commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, is Bhakti Parashanu Bhavo Viraktiran Yatra Cha, that verse. And he makes his presentation in this way, or he makes a commentary about the verse that proportionate to the quality of devotion of an individual, they will feel satisfied and thus attraction, affinity for matter will dissipate, just like the verses quoted from the first canto, chapter 2, Bhagavatam. Proportionate to. So the proportionate to is both where we are in our spiritual trajectory, but it's also, in other words, how assiduously we have applied ourselves over a period of time to the hearing process in a not cosmetic but a genuine, sincere reaching to Krishna way. Even one may be a beginner on that, at least in this lifetime, in that process, but if one is very sincere in one's endeavors, Krishna reciprocates. He sees that sincerity. Oh, I could spend a long time on this topic, but we spoke about an hour during the japa retreat in Houston about this one word, matihi, in the description by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit about ajamila. Matihi means, in this case, it's Lord Vishnu considered. The Vishnu Dutas were explaining, or he was explaining why the Vishnu Dutas came. Vishnu Dutas came because Lord Vishnu sent the Vishnu Dutas. And why did he send the Vishnu Dutas? Matihi. Because Lord Vishnu thought, oh, he's calling my name. So I must protect him. And so he sent his messengers. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's like an 8-page purport, explaining if even Ajamila unintentionally just calls the name of Narayana, what Narayana feels, oh, he's calling my name. Then what to speak of if the intention goes up and up. So proportionate to the bhakti principle, which is spoken of in the previous verse, that awakens further and further by the hearing process. As bhakti grows, Krishna reveals himself proportionately. Asamshayam, samagram, completely, completely, or as completely as a tiny living entity can know the incomplete, that much. And Krishna can empower the living entity to understand him more than the living entity can otherwise understand him. Understand anything by Krishna's empowerment. So proportionate to. And if one follows this, what follows this verse, like what Krishna promises he's going to explain, one can come to the stage and beyond, to the stage of asakti, and then further in the process of devotional service by hearing very nicely. Small thing. Hearing very nicely. Hearing regularly very nicely. So we'll take some time for some discussion. I like coming to Chicago. Everyone has so many questions. Nice discussions. Yes. Here comes the microphone.
Guru Maharaj, when we hear the term completely, I mean, I think you touched upon that. I just want to hear more.
As much as the living entity.
So that when we hear that, we should immediately understand that it's in proportion to the devotion of the...
And it's also who can understand the the unlimited. Mm-hmm. So still, within that context, however much the limited can understand the unlimited, that much. Mm-hmm. And proportionate to, completely. Yeah. Okay? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your class. My question has to do with a particular set of verses that comes in the 22nd chapter of the Madhya Lila, where it's being described that, you know, Krishna himself is speaking. He says that this foolish person, he doesn't realize that he has, you know, all these material desires. Why should I fulfill them? You know, rather I will take away his material desires.
Rather I will
take away his material desires.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
It's very nice. And it goes, you know, the several verses in that same mood, that Krishna, he, one who takes away devotional service and material desires, and, you know, Krishna fulfills his material desires in such a way that he loses taste for them. And I thought it was very beautiful.
It's very beautiful.
If you could maybe elaborate on what this reveals about Krishna's nature.
Krishna is very kind. Krishna is very kind. Who can be a better master than Krishna? Krishna wants to give us the best. And we want, you know, kacha. And he wants to give us the best. Krishna is very kind. He's that kind of a master. Even though we want, he gives us what's the best. I'm thinking, as probably you were thinking when you read the literature, for that 22nd chapter section, of Uddhava appreciating Krishna to Vidura. Who could get a better master than Krishna? Putana came to kill Krishna, and Krishna knew it. And Krishna accepted the service that she rendered as a mother and gave her a position of mother in the spiritual world. Who could think of a better master than that? Krishna is very kind. Or Dhruva Maharaj. He got his kingdom, but he also, you know, the transcendental kingdom, better than my father's father's father. But he also wanted to, you know, show up his stepmother, so that was fulfilled too. But in such a way that the desire was removed. That's, you know, that's Krishna's nature. It's his loving nature. He wants to give the best. And we don't even know what the best is. And so we're desiring something. Even we think we want the best. We don't, you know, we're covered. But Krishna wants to give us the best. That's the kind of master we're serving. That's Krishna's kindness. Something else?
Maharaj, I was wondering, in this verse and many other verses, why does Krishna generalize with the word yoga and not be more specific as to what kind of yoga he's referring to? Bhakti yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, or am I just not reading it correctly?
Well, he's, in this case, why don't you shut it off? In this case, he's explaining text 47, which is very clear which kind of yoga, the Uttama. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam kind of yoga. But even that's the case, there are different audiences, different hearers that hear what they want to hear because they've got their filters. And so Krishna is speaking to elevate everybody, even those that want to hear what they want to hear. Even when he's explicit, they hear what they want to hear. So Krishna is teaching everybody. But he's teaching his pure devotee, and the pure devotee gets it because of that the devotion, and otherwise they don't get it, even if he said it clearly. But he knows his audience. That's another answer. He is being clear. He's not being unclear. But there are like the discussion in the purport yesterday's verse about, again, Luke had asked a question about it, that Prabhupada says it's to practice bhakti properly, one needs to know what the other yogas are, because they're elements of it. So they're not zeros. We don't, you know, snub them. They're spoken of in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, but they're subsets of bhakti. So some have affinity for this, some have affinity for that, and according to their affinity, that's what they hear anyway. So let them feel encouraged and become elevated. Luke's got something cooking over there. No? Okay. Anyone? Yes.
How do we understand Krishna's kindness?
How do we do what?
How do we understand Krishna's kindness in situations where devotees really get burned out by the reaction to
devotees
the
offer? Devotees get what?
Burned out.
Burned out.
From the reaction to offenses so much that they have to stay away from Krishna consciousness.
I'm going to ask Jai Jagannath to answer that question. He spoke about it in this morning's class. You know, to the degree that bhakti is there, we'll see situations where that look like a difficulty as an opportunity, and not just because, you know, it's popular to think like that. They think like that because they see everything in relation to Krishna, who is very kind. But persons who are offensive, and thus get burned out because of those offenses, it's another kind of kindness of Krishna. Persons wish to turn away from him. The envy towards others and the offenses that are made as a result is ultimately envy towards Krishna, and Krishna doesn't interfere. They have independence. He's not advising them, but they're wanting anyways. So he doesn't interfere. But he does it in such a way, you know, there's this nice verse in the Bhagavatam that says, having once had some experience of Krishna, one can never forget, even if one tries. We find that. Some, you know, people particularly try, and they can't. Yes, Ruspek.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. We know that ideally we shouldn't ask Krishna for like material things. We should pray for his service. But given the fact that, like adding self-honesty to it, that we have material desires, should we ask him our material desires, not necessarily gross things, but, you know, it's like...
I'm thinking of Jai Jagannath's comment in this morning in class when somebody says, but it has not eliminated everything else they said before that. And then you ask the question. We know we shouldn't, but should we?
You know, it's like there's self-honesty, you know, it's like, for instance, I want, like, peace.
So let's qualify the
knowledge.
First statement. It's not that we shouldn't ask Krishna. It's that pure devotional service is characterized by not asking Krishna for something for oneself. That's the standard of pure devotional service. Now the self-honesty is, I'm not at that standard. So now what should I do? And then the answer largely depends upon faith. And if I don't ask Krishna for something, maybe he's going to forget me. That's a question of faith. And if one has faith, then I don't need to... Here's a very nice example. You know the Gajendra Moksha Leela. So when Gajendra has got this crocodile on his leg for 100 years and doing battle, he realizes he's finished. Although he's a king of elephants, he's going to lose. So in that moment of desperation, he gets this remembrance from Super Soul of the stotras he chanted in his previous life. Even he's in an elephant body. And so he begins in his elephant body performing what he did in his King Indradumna body. He begins offering prayers. And boy, is he sincere. As if his life depended upon it, because it does. That kind of prayer. Like how we should chant. And in the course of offering his prayers, he gets so intensely connected to the personality of Godhead that he gets this spontaneous prayer that says, I don't have to ask you for protection. Because you have the beginning parts, it's just glorification. I don't have to ask you for protection because I'm confident you'll protect me. So let my prayer be instead, when this thing is finished with the crocodile on my leg, please keep me always engaged in your devotional service. He went beyond the, you know, I got to pray for something. Where before he was got to pray for something. Help. So depending upon one's faith and one's, you know, position, better to pray to Krishna for something than to you know, I know I'm supposed to not pray for something because that's what pure devotion is, but I'm down here. So we pray to Krishna for something. And pay close attention to the hearing and chanting activities so that there's, I mean, you missed the morning class. It was a brilliant class. Well, part of it. The part that Jai Jagannath spoke especially resonated, where the Sambandha Gyan, or purified intelligence, can then direct the heart, so the heart, you can tell the heart, hey. And then it's real. Then I know that I have these desires, and so my inclination is to ask you for the fulfillment of these desires, but deep inside, somewhere inside me, I know the real issue is I've forgotten you. So please restore my complete remembrance of you, regardless of the circumstance. Please keep me engaged in your service. And meanwhile, you know, the crocodile on my leg or whatever it is. The you know, the mixed is the real statements, but amplify the, you know, the ultimate while acknowledging, you know, the intermediate. Okay, time's up. 7:30. Thank you all. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.